Three, two, one.
Hello and welcome everyone to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust. And we celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, and the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Integrated Marketing, and I am joined, as always, by co-host Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy at Revive. Hello, hello, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, this is a very exciting episode because we are also joined by a very special guest, Dr. James Jarvis, who is here with us from the great state of Maine. He leads family medicine at Eastern Maine Medical Center in Bangor, Maine, and he also has a significant amount of experience both on the practicing side and clinical side, as well as research for undergraduate and graduate programs, and has just a wealth of knowledge and experience that he's going to bring to us today in all things healthcare, primary care, and the world of that physicians are experiencing. So hello, Dr. Jarvis.
Hello, Stephanie and Chris. Thank you for having me on today. And boy, what an introduction there. I think you need to share that with my wife. That would be helpful for me.
Well, why don't you give us an introduction as well? If you can share a little bit about who you are, your background, so that our audience can really hear straight from you. We would love to hear all about, you know, what you do in your day-to-day and your experience.
Well, great. As you said, I'm a family physician by training. I have been here in Maine for 15 years. I was recruited to Maine to take over their family medicine residency program, which I did for about 9 years. I was very fortunate to be able to be on the national stage in that regard as well. I was the president of the Association of Family Medicine Residency Directors and had some influence on some national policy making around resident education and primary care, as well as some primary care things. I then transitioned to the role of being the chief medical officer at our flagship hospital at Northern Light, Eastern Maine Medical Center, and then was in the middle of transitioning to take over education and research, both at the flagship hospital and then hopefully across the system when COVID-19 hit. And I was tagged to be the clinical lead physician for our response to COVID-19, which you can imagine for the last 3 years. Somewhat consumed most of my time, particularly during the first 2 years, first dealing with the pandemic itself and then rollout for vaccinations. I still am a practicing physician. I do have a small clinical practice. I see patients one half day a week. I do help out with the residency program, typically taking call for them when the residents are on for obstetrics. And so I still deliver babies, and that's kind of fun for me. And so I still practice as much family medicine as I possibly can while being mostly an administrator. One of the wonderful things about being in Maine is that despite being a very large state, we're a very small town. And during the pandemic, I was very blessed to be able to work with my colleagues, both in the public sector as well as the private sector. People that used to be competitors of mine are now best friends of mine. And I think it resulted in the fact that Maine has one of the lowest mortality rates in the state from COVID. And so that's kind of what I've been doing. And right now I'm trying to get back on track with the job I was hired for, which is to revamp education and research across our 10 hospital health system.
Wow, that is incredible. I think it's safe to say that you have had a very busy and exciting last several years.
People start talking to me about a date and I'm like, when was that? And they'll be like, that was 3 years ago. And I'll be like, that can't possibly have been 3 years ago. But time flew during that horrible time in our nation's history as well as the world's history.
It's all a blur. Well, I think you've actually set up this conversation really beautifully, which is that there is a lot happening and a lot changing in healthcare overall, but especially in the area of primary care and family medicine and for hospitals and health systems broadly. So that's really what we want to talk about. We want to talk and hear your perspectives on the changes taking place. Some of our recent episodes on this show have been regarding things like the changing narrative and the changing perceptions of physicians from health tech and consumers and the industry in general. We've also been discussing some of the tension that's taking place between health tech and health systems, the growth and expansion of technology and what that means for physician roles. So those are just some examples of some of the topics that our listeners have been hearing over the last several weeks. but we're really looking to, you know, just truly learn from you and hear directly from your mouth of what you've been experiencing. So I may turn this over to Chris to lead us in a little bit of a discussion, and we can dig into to all the fun.
Oh yeah, this is, I'm excited. Okay. So I think let's start, Dr. Jarvis, at the highest level, right? So how are you seeing the industry really change from your seat? Because you've really got a very interesting perspective being a family medicine physician, a physician leader, as well as supporting education and research. So what do you see as the big changes?
So I think there's a lot of big changes going on in healthcare right now. I think one of the biggest challenges that we're all going to face is just a shortage of healthcare workers in every aspect, every spectrum. So, you know, it's not just doctors and nurses, but it's every level. Our environmental services staff, the housekeepers, we need those individuals to keep our hospitals clean and safe. The tech people being recruited away from healthcare. And so I think that's going to be a challenge that over the next decade is really going to be important that people understand. Supply chain issues continue to be a problem for us. Long before the pandemic, there was always supply chain issues. You may recall that a number of years ago, we had this issue where after major problems in Puerto Rico, that we weren't being able to get IV supplies in a timely fashion. And we had to, you know, basically redefine what we did in order to get IV fluids to our patients in a safe manner. So that predated the pandemic. The pandemic just exacerbated it, and we continue to see that. We continue to have drug shortages, supply shortages. And these are things that, again, I think we talked about a lot during the height of the pandemic. And then as we move on, we kind of forget about those, but they're still there. So I think those are our biggest challenges. The other challenge is we're going to have this gap with the newest people coming into healthcare during their formative years, whether that be the end of high school, the college years, or for those who have advanced degrees. They have 2-year gaps in their formal training. And we're certainly seeing that on the healthcare education side dramatically with our nurses and our nursing students and our medical students, that they really had these 2 years where they were kind of doing this either hybrid learning or completely online, or frankly, were just sent home. You know, there were a lot of medical students who were in their third year of training, which is when you get the bulk of what it is to be a doctor, that were sent home for months at a time without having any contact with patients. And that gap is coming back now for us to have to re-educate or educate primarily and get them up to speed. And there's no way to stop that, right? We couldn't have said, okay, well, we're just going to not have nurses graduate from nursing school for 2 years. We're not going to have medical students enter residency for 2 years. So what happens is they move on into the next phase of their careers. They're still catching up from those gaps. And we're going to see that down the road from those that were in high school and college during those exact same times. So again, adding to that challenge of we already have a workforce challenge, and then you bring in a workforce that isn't quite as experienced as we're used to seeing. So I think, you know, from my global standpoint, and obviously for what I do as an educator, those are things that are extremely concerning to me. And also we just have this exodus of some of our of, you know, the elder statesmen, so to speak, in all of those areas. And so you're having that brain drain at the same time when you're bringing in a less experienced workforce. And I think that's going to be a harmful thing for us as well.
Wow. You have really summed it up beautifully. It is a major, major issue that the industry is facing. We've seen staggering numbers, like there's expectations of a shortage of up to 124,000 physicians by 2034. And then as you've painted, there's so many areas that has implications on. Can you just share with us a little bit of what does that look like in terms of the day-to-day role of physicians? Should we continue to progress in that way? How does that affect the day-to-day of physicians, and what kind of stress are they under?
Yeah, I will say when I was younger in my career and I was in the Air Force at the time, you know, it was always yes. My answer was always, of course I can do that. Of course I can take an extra patient today. Of course I can do, you know, that extra thing, or I could go on that, you know, educational experience that you needed me to do, or things like that. Those now are so frequent requests that physicians have to say no to a lot of that kind of extra stuff, or just being there for one more patient on an overburdened health system. And I think that's kind of some of the things that you're going to see as challenges. It's also the reason why we're seeing such a high burnout rate amongst healthcare professionals, because they've been asked to do more with less for such a long period of time. And then you exacerbated that with the immediate crisis we had when the pandemic started in 2020 and then progressed all the way through. You know, here we are three plus years later, and we're still talking about some of those same issues. So I think that just kind of confounds things. And it also means that, you know, that calling that most of us felt when we went into healthcare, particularly those of us that went into medicine and became physicians, the calling becomes a lot harder to justify when you're working these long, hard hours and sometimes feel like the public isn't as supportive as they have been in the past.
Yeah. Wow. That's, you know, it's really interesting to hear you talk about, you know, the struggle to kind of really, you know, fulfill the calling that, you know, that you felt to get into the profession. So one of the things that we have thought a lot about is, you know, family medicine, primary care is really kind of seen as the savior of healthcare. And I see you, I'd love to hear your reaction to that. It's like so much is hung on primary care, but there's so many challenges with primary care in today's environment.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I was just recently came back from vacation and just happened to be talking to an individual who was in healthcare, never met them before. And, you know, and when I had said that I was a family physician, they said, oh, well, that's clearly the hardest specialty. So I chuckled because I actually went into family medicine for that very reason. I was a child of the 60s and 70s I was born when Sesame Street came out and my parents plopped me in front of the TV. So I probably had a bit of ADHD growing up, wanting to have all of that rapid information and stuff. And, you know, I've talked to my specialty colleagues and I say, I don't know how you do one thing over and over again all the time. Like I need that. I need the variability. I need that drive, the excitement of, you know, every patient that I see every day is a very different patient than the last patient I saw. I like that about my profession, but it does make it hard, right? I need to know a little bit about everything in order to take care of patients. And I think, you know, in some ways that's the challenge of primary care right now is where is it that primary care has to take care of as just its specialty and what it's supposed to be doing? And where is it that specialty care comes into play? And I think that's been challenging for us. You talk about mental health issues, you know, about more than 75% of all mental health issues are taken care of by primary care providers, specifically family physicians. Then you look at, well, what about those that went into psychiatry or psychology or social work? You know, where do they pick up that? And then, well, they are overwhelmed. We know that. We know that our emergency departments are overwhelmed with patients with mental health issues. We know that on the outpatient side, just trying to just do routine counseling for people who have depression or other mental health issues, that's overburdening that part of the system. And so, again, it falls back to primary care. And then let's add to that, oh, now we have long COVID. Initially, we thought long COVID was going to be an issue for our pulmonologists. Well, we know that it affects cognitive issues. We know it affects neurologic issues. We know it affects cardiac issues. So who takes care of all of those things? Again, it becomes primary care. And so I think, you know, there's that aspect of things that make it so that maybe a younger generation isn't so interested to go into primary care because it becomes so expansive and it becomes that kind of, how am I going to handle all this? I flip that around and say, you're going to handle it because that's what you're trained to do. And boy, it brings such joy because that's what your patients day to day are going to need from you is to be able to say, oh, at this moment, we're going to talk about your acute cold. But the next very next moment, we're going to talk about how we're going to prevent you from having worsening complications of your diabetes. I find that, you know, just invigorating. And then, of course, the value when you see your patients do well just makes that even better.
I mean, I think that's so inspiring. And I'm kind of a rare bird. Up until recently when my physician retired, I've had the same physician with the exception of 3 years since the age of 27. And so I see the promise of primary care, but I'm curious, you know, not only is it a difficult job because you are managing so many different things, how do you think consumers' perceptions of primary care physicians have evolved? Where are they at today? Do they fully understand what the benefit of primary care and how are they using primary care or not using it the way they should be?
Yeah, so there's a couple of factors there. One, of course, is that we are now in a generation that wants instant gratification, instant results. And so, you know, the old, you know, thing of you called your primary care office and you asked for an appointment and they said, okay, you know, we have an appointment in the next, whatever, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, depending on where you live. That's not what they want, right? So instead of building a relationship with a primary care provider, and I'm proud of the fact that I have many of my patients I've been seeing since day one. So for 15 years here in Maine, I've been seeing the same collective group of patients. I know about their families. I know about, the tragedies they've had and the wonderful successes they had, the marriages, the births, the deaths. That's not what's happening oftentimes, especially with our younger generation, is that they really just want that quick answer. And so therefore they're using telehealth in a way. They're using, apps to go on and just talk to somebody to get the answer to the question that they have right now. I think that'll be some detrimental because sometimes there are a lot of things where it's important to know what the family is like and what's going on inside that household when you're dealing with crises or just routine health issues and concerns. So I try to inform people. Yes, it's great to have those kind of urgent care visits and things like that, and even being able to do telehealth and getting the quick answer. But for a lot of medical conditions, you really need that continuity of care. And primary care is the one specialty that does that over and over and over again. The other thing that we focus in on is preventative care. And you can't get that in that one-stop shop kind of mentality. And it's really important. I have had countless conversations with individuals over the last 3 years about why it's so important to get vaccinated, not just against COVID-19, but against other things, right? We've seen outbreaks of measles, mumps. And now polio-like illnesses, polio, I would have never thought I would see polio in my career, and I've been a physician for 30 years. To hear that coming back is devastating news. And so those kind of conversations, really, we know that when you have a personal relationship with your physician, and I'm going to say physician on purpose there, and that's not to exclude our nurse practitioners, our PAs, or anyone else in the healthcare field, but when you get that level of expertise who can sit there and explain the science and the logic and the reason behind all of these things, we have a better acceptance of the things that we all need to do to be better and healthier people. We need to work as a team. And so that's where our nurse practitioners and our physician assistants and our nurse midwives and everyone else in the healthcare system, plays a role. But I do, I am definitely biased. I know that. But I do think that there needs to be at least a physician involved in that care, just simply because of the hours of expertise that we have and the experiences that we have had to help solve when those problems are not routine anymore.
Wow. Okay. There's a lot to get into here. I think Chris and I are like chomping at the bit here. So you've said several things that piqued my ears. One, as you were talking about the importance of that long-term relationship and knowledge ability of a physician to really have that lifelong relationship, it makes me think about where the industry is heading or talking about heading, right? We've got new entrants coming in who are really messaging hard about the convenience factor. So, as you mentioned, younger generations are really living in an Amazon era and a TikTok era and living in an instant gratification era. And so messaging that Amazon, One Medical, or other, concierge services have about same day appointments and texting is really powerful. However, to your point, many of those services do not have a robust Rolodex of physicians with long-term experience with clinical expertise or the ability to refer to specialists. And I believe there's going to be a major issue if and when these new market entrants start to get more mass mainstream adoption. So that's just my perspective and opinion, but I would love to hear if you have a take on it, either similar or different.
Well, and I will say that big institutions like my own have failed to recognize the need for that. There for years there have been models where, you only have three kinds of appointments in your office: a today appointment, a tomorrow appointment, and a future appointment that the provider says you need to have. So not you generating it, but the provider saying that. And had we followed those models all along, had we, really embraced that kind of mentality, I think you would not see these pop-up shops coming up like you're doing right now, simply because there is that need and demand. I always laugh because, I practice in a very rural state, and we have a physician shortage across the nation in rural areas, and I think people forget how vast our rural areas are in the United States. We talk about big cities all the time, and yes, maybe those are population centers, but there are plenty of our population that live in these rural communities, and many of whom grew up in a town where there was only one physician, and that physician delivered everybody that was in the town. They buried everybody that was in the town and took care of everybody in between. I think it's a shame that we've lost some of that continuity. Why? Because as we get older, when you're young and healthy and your problems are usually just acute and short-term limited things, that's great. But let's just talk about women who want to make sure that they're ready when they want to have a baby, that they've taken care of all the necessary preventative things that they could do before they get pregnant. And then after they get pregnant, get adequate health care, deliver in a safe and responsible way, and then have their children taken care of once the child is born. Where is that continuity going to happen when you're talking about those one, you know, those one-stop shops kind of places? That's not what they're built for. They're not really designed for that. And if that's where we're headed in healthcare in the United States, then who gets that care? And that's just one example. Then you start talking about, you know, everybody, you know, there's always, you know, cancer is always a factor. There's not a family in the United States who hasn't been affected by cancer. Again, there's some continuity things that help with that. You know, I can think of one case recently in my own practice where, you know, I just did a routine test on somebody. It came back abnormal. I followed the train down and unfortunately they wound up, you know, being diagnosed with a type of cancer. And I continue to hear from the specialist, how did they pick this up? And I go, I was just doing my job. Like, I didn't do anything special. I just did you know, their typical contacts that they had were that this would have taken probably a 2 years for the diagnosis to be made rather than a 2 months for the diagnosis to be made. And I think that's another thing that, you know, having that family physician, having that continuity of care within primary care sometimes can, you know, pick up on the subtle signs that something's just not right there. I was just having a conversation with an individual who unfortunately was misdiagnosed with a cancer diagnosis. And their message to everybody was, I just needed to be heard. I kept saying something was wrong. And I kept being told that, well, it's probably just this because you don't fit the profile for what you think it is. Having that continuity, sometimes you just notice the anxiety or the angst or just something different that you're able to pick up on that. Similarly, when you know the family well, you can do the same thing. You know, I often ask my family, the families of my patients, you know, well, how's so-and-so doing? Because I know that's been a stress in your life. Or how's that new job or that new relationship going? And when the answer is, well, actually, that relationship fell apart, that's a different person than the person I saw the last time they were in my office. And so I think that's kind of the value of having some of that continuity. And at the same time, we obviously still need to have specialists and subspecialists because there are things that just can't be handled in the primary care sphere, whether that because of time or expertise. And so I think, you know, all of that blends together.
Wow, that's great. So yeah, there's a couple things I want to dig a little deeper on. So that's the promise of primary care. I mean, that is exactly, you know, being able to continuity of care, preventative care, dealing with health issues as they come up. At the same time, though, we talked in the beginning about all the challenges, you know, fewer providers and less time with patients and, you know, more of some of the burdens of just practicing medicine. So how do you think primary care today is living up to that expectation of what it can do? And then also back to the idea of really being looked at as the savior of our health system and being able to effectively, you know, help people live their lives.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that can come out of that. So, you know, there's the direct primary care model, some physicians who have basically gotten out of the rat race, many of whom do not accept insurance or at least insurance in the normal pathways. And that they have as much smaller practice than most physicians were having, so that they can be more intimate. You know, they take a lifestyle hit to that. There's an economic challenge sometimes for individuals who do that, but for their patients, it works out well. There's concierge service. You guys talked about that a little bit earlier. You know, in a concierge service, again, a smaller number of patients in your practice. And I think big companies need to start looking at maybe that, you know, saying a panel of 2,000 patients is too great for a primary care provider, and particularly, you know, the physician who's trying to do it all and maintain their skills and things that they can do. And so looking at that as a balance, you know, what is the right balance there? And then making sure that we have adequate staffing. You know, I could do a whole lot more if I had 3 medical assistants than if I have 1 medical assistant. But there's a cost to that as well. And then where does tech come into this? We could speak for hours on the pluses and minuses of electronic health records and, you know, whether they are a convenience and add on a safety measure or just an annoyance to everybody. And I could probably say yes to every single one of those and be accurate in each of those statements. And so I think, you know, I would like to see us have a shift where one, primary care is a little bit higher respected than it is in the medical community, and two, is resourced in a way that makes it so that they can do the job that they're really doing, that they need to do.
I've got a question here. So you've mentioned a couple times so far, you know, you mentioned earlier the importance of the relationship, and you were just talking about how many patients is too many for one physician to kind of build that relationship with. And earlier you shared in a story that you had a patient that just wanted to be heard. And we've been seeing so much, especially post-pandemic, during pandemic, about empathy, right? And patients want so badly to be heard and seen, especially patients across, you know, very diverse patients that maybe have had challenging experience before. However, that butts right up against this tension of staffing shortages and, to your point, the tech that maybe takes doctors' time away from patients. So there's this bubbling up narrative that's been around for a little while, but this narrative that's like, my doctor doesn't see me, my doctor doesn't hear me. So tell me, you know, what are those conversations, especially as you educate and bring on new physicians into the space? What are your conversations around that, and how are you all thinking about that potentially false narrative that's out there?
Yeah, and I think there is some of that. So it's interesting. So, you know, when I started practice, pen and paper was our only communication effort. We used fax machines on a regular basis. I actually was part of a transition for the first electronic health record that the military used when I was a resident. So saw that transition. And then, of course, we have these global health networks that just, you know, really can be used across, across health systems, states, and around the world, which I think is wonderful. So, you know, first and foremost, say when I first started the first true electronic record, I loved it. Why? Because when I'd get a patient that would come in and say, you know, they needed 10 prescriptions refilled, you know who had to do that? I did. I had to write them all out. Now, with the click of a button, I can do those 10. I can do that in seconds rather than hours. At the end of my day, I had to answer all of my telephone calls, right? So all the patients that called throughout the day, I didn't do those during the day. They came to me at the end of the day when somebody handed me a stack of charts. Now those are answered during the day. And so at the end of the day, I don't have that. And I think when you're new to medicine and you've only lived in the electronic world, it just seems like there's something always pressing. But you don't realize that the former generation, we did that, but we did it after hours, just like now you're doing your documentation after hours. It was just a different kind of, it was a shift. But then there's a lot of waste in it. There's a lot of duplicity in electronic health record. There's a lot of requirements, of boxes that have to be checked. And I think that's where we see our patients, you know, feeling that there's this disconnect. When we first started using electronic records, our patients loved it. Why? Because they saw in real time that what they were talking about was so important, we were putting it into a computer. Now it's that computer is always in the way, right? It's the doctor's talking to the computer and not talking to me. And I think we missed the boat on that one. We needed to find a way that we could continue that narrative that every word that you say is so important, I am putting it pen to paper in an electronic form so that the next provider you have has that information. Now it just seems like we're doing a lot of clicks. We often feel like we're the person in the airline that's doing a reservation, right? What do they always say? I'm sorry, it's just the computer's a little slow right now. That's not what a patient wants. But in reality, when I first started, we had 15-minute appointments. 8 minutes of that was with the physician, of which maybe 3 minutes was actual communication contact. I would say now I actually have much more time that I'm talking to my patients, as we know that unless it's a need, the physical exam may not be the most important thing that we're doing in that exam room. Me listening to a healthy person's heart and lungs probably adds nothing other than the comfort of them knowing I did it, as opposed to me spending 5 minutes where I don't talk and I just listen to my patient talk about the things that's important to them. And I'd like to see us kind of try to get back to more of that. We see that certainly with some, you know, things that are kind of creeping into healthcare, a lot of the alternative medicine and things are really more focusing on listening to the patient than they are in just writing a new prescription or sending a referral to a specialist.
I'm getting a little emotional as you're talking about that, because that side of the story that you're sharing is, I think, not getting enough headlines. It's not getting enough airtime, right? It's the other side of the story that's just keeps coming at consumers. And to your point, you being able to see the transition over time, you being able to see what the tech has done to actually enable closer patient relationships and enable more listening is really fascinating. So first of all, thank you for sharing that, because I think it's a really powerful insight.
Yeah, I think there's other benefits to it as well. I am sure I am very guilty early on in my practice of missing a lot of key important moments where preventative care needed to be done. Whether that be missing the vaccination schedule for a middle schooler, or missing something in terms of cancer screening for somebody who was older, simply because I was bogged down in whatever the acute reason was for the visit. And now, of course, we get alerts and reminders, making it a whole lot easier. We can send mass messages out. Now's the time for everybody to get their flu shot. We weren't able to do that in the past. And so those are the hidden benefits that I think we miss out on. I love the fact that we have a patient portal in our system, and my patients can communicate with me after hours. They don't have to be there in that 9-to-5 moment of calling and waiting through the phone tree to get to me. They can type a message that's not urgent, knowing that at some point I will respond to them, and oftentimes I can respond to them directly. That was key to me staying in practice during the pandemic. I literally did not have time to be in the office, but I could still be in attuned to my patients who didn't actually physically need to see me, but had questions, whether it was questions about COVID or questions about other things, I could still answer them. That asynchronous thing, that is a major change to the way healthcare is being done. And I think it's a huge benefit. I mean, how many of us have time? We all have jobs. And so being able to communicate with your provider at 9 o'clock at night rather than at 9 o'clock in the morning, for some people, that's a game changer. And a lot of things can be handled that way. But again, the better that's much better with somebody who knows you. So that provider that you have continuity with, who knows your family, knows your situation, knows your work, it makes those answers a whole lot better and probably a better communication as well.
First of all, thank you for being here and sharing all of these incredible stories and insights with us. And thank you for all that you do on a daily basis and all the lives that you're saving.
Well, thank you both. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. And thank you, Chris. Thank you for your wisdom as always and for joining. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in as well. And if there's something you want us to cover, please shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. Make sure you share this show with friends and colleagues and give us a rating and review on iTunes. We always appreciate that. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. We want everyone out there to push that no normal, to push primary care, to push, health saving education. And we will see you next time. 3